Welcome to Business of Design. Business of Design is the world's best business training for interior design professionals like you. The Business of Design podcast offers immediate, actionable strategies and a glimpse into some of the many field-tested, proven systems you can implement to transform your business and your life. After the show, head to businessofdesign.com and get started with the BOD 15-step project management strategy and 6 foundational programs. Together, they deliver the systems, procedures, and strategies you need to run a successful, highly profitable design business. There's no theory here. The complete BOD business model is yours through Business of Design membership. Business of Design. There's only one. And now, your BOD Advocate-in-Chief, Kimberly Selden.
Hello, you fabulous interior design professional. It's great that you're here because we have a wonderful guest returning, Holly Applequist. You may recall that last time she was on the show, she was with her team. And this time, it's just the boss. And she's talking about, among other things, how she uses her core value and mission statement in her business life, her day-to-day business life. She's also talking about that transition from running just a little business to a business that matters, a business that's profitable, and now how she's even transitioned away from just thinking about salary to thinking about growing that independent wealth that we talk about at Business of Design. I love this story because so often we meet interior design professionals who say, well, you know, it's great, Kimberly, you live in Toronto and you live in Santa Monica, and those are two big cities. And so you can charge XYZ, but I can't because I live in a small town. Holly is from Regina, Saskatchewan. Small place, small town, right? Not a thriving big city. And yet you're going to hear that even there, you, yes, can charge a living wage. You can earn a salary. You can earn profitability. And you can even earn so much that you can put away money for the future. And I love those stories because that happened to me, that realization that, oh my gosh, I'm not running a little business. I'm running a business. Stop using those qualifying words around the business, just a small business, a little design studio. You're running a business. And the sooner you own it and the sooner you make those decisions that you're just going to excel and be profitable, oh my gosh, the greater your success and growth. And I got to say, at Business of Design, we just live for your success and your growth. It matters to us that you succeed. If you don't succeed, we don't succeed. And I'm not having any of that. I'll tell you, I'm not having any of that. I'm going to quickly hear some announcements from Cheryl Horn, and you're going to hear them too. And then we're going to jump into the episode with Holly. And I should say also, definitely follow Holly on Instagram at Applequist Interior Design. For more information about Holly and her team, go to businessofdesign.com. And that's just a good place to hang out anyway. We're so glad you're here.
Thanks, Kimberly. Well, I'm going to take this opportunity to do something a little bit differently. I'm sure everyone's heard us talk about the BOD 15, Business of Design's 15-step project management strategy. It comes up all the time on interviews. But last week and this week, in speaking with Holly, some of our other programs have come up. So I just wanted to touch on some of the programs that you might not be aware of that's available to you within membership. So on this episode, when Holly's talking about her mission statement, we do have a program called BOD Vision, Values, and Mission. And from this episode, you'll understand how that really works within your business. But that is a 2-hour program available to you within membership. There's worksheets to create each of those touch points for your business. It also teaches you how to strategically use those within your business, both client-facing and team-facing. It really is an effective tool that you should have set up. So again, that's available to you within membership. Another program that we touched on when Holly was on with her team was BOD Salary, Revenue, Profit, and Wealth. And specifically within the revenue course in that program, we talked about an exercise that allows you to determine how many projects you really need in a year. If you're a Business of Design member or a past Business of Design member, you know that the overall strategy we teach at Business of Design is not about the marketing efforts to bring in as many clients as possible. The goal really is to make each project more profitable and service fewer clients, fewer projects over the course of a year. And overall, the profit you will earn and the goal of independent wealth becomes achievable. And that sort of growth strategy, that's really where we hone in on talking about money, but next level, not just understanding your profit and loss statement, really how one leads to the other. So again, that's salary, revenue, profit, and wealth. It's available to you within membership. It's a 3-hour program, but again, there's homework, there's worksheets available in a lot of these programs in addition to all of the forms and templates you need to really implement the systems we teach at Business of Design. So if you're not familiar with all of the programs that are available to you within membership, please head to the website. Programs are right there in the main navigation. You can skim through and learn more about those. Of course, if you've got any questions about membership or our programs, reach out to me, Cheryl@businessofdesign.com. Thanks so much.
Holly, it's great to see you again. Hi.
Hi.
Wow. Okay. Last time you were on the show, we had, you had you and a couple of your team members, two of the three other staff you have on the show. And there were so many things we didn't get to talk about. So I thought it might be nice to kind of hit some of the things that we didn't have time for in episode number one, if that sounds okay.
Sounds great.
One of the things that you talked about in your application was this idea that you are living your core values and your mission statement every day. Tell us what that means and what that looks like.
Well, I think it means that, first of all, my staff know what our core values are, and they're drinking the Kool-Aid. So they know that we are at our core is ethical behavior. So that means, for example, on a daily basis, you're never recommending something just because you know you can make more money on it,
right,
or because there's a commission to it or something else. It's never about that. It's about what's best for the client. Yeah. We want to be honest. Transparency is definitely one at our core. Treating people with respect, honesty, all of those things. And so every time we have a conversation about anything, or if there's a conflict or a client asking a question that, we know that with those core values, that's how we're responding is within that context. So we're always going to be honest with our customers. We're never going to recommend things that don't make sense for them, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So
yeah.
that we're
yeah.
developing that trust that is critical when working with a client.
That was so important to me because this industry has such a bad reputation as being an industry where a lot of shenanigans take place, and we've all seen it. Like, I've been on the job site where the contractor has ordered twice as much tile as was required, and half the shipment ended up on the back of his truck going to another job or to his kid's house or whatever. I've been on those jobs, and I don't want to live like that. So that was really, really important to me. And I always say, integrity can be expensive, because if I make a mistake on a job site, it's going to cost me money. But then we charge more, and we charge enough money so that from time to time, a legitimate mistake that could not be avoided, that is my fault, I can absorb it. And my son is the lucky beneficiary of a 6-foot solid marble sink, which is going to be spectacular when he renovates his house.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get it out of my garage where it's been for about 4 years.
Yeah. Well, we've owned the odd bathtub, sink, faucet. Yeah. And I think it's okay to... No one, even our clients do not expect us to be perfect.
No.
They just expect us to be accountable.
Yeah. My gosh, yes. Tell me you'll take care of it. Tell me you'll have integrity.
Yeah.
Then I can relax.
Tell me you've got my back. Tell me you're going to treat me fairly and with respect. And they're okay with that. They don't need us to be perfect. And we never say we are. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So I think when we talk about, how do you live your values? That's how. Through everyday experiences that you encounter as you work through your projects.
Yeah.
And all of our staff are very tuned into exactly what those are. They have the confidence to respond within the context of our core values. And I'm never going to tell them that if they did something that was within our core values, I'm going to support them, and I've got their back too. And if we need to buy a bathtub, that's what we do. You know,
that's how it is. I have this client who wants pink in her project. We were doing a basement renovation and she wants some pink and some pink. So I said, oh, over the dining room ceiling, there's this tray and it would be beautiful if we could do that a lovely pink color. And between you and me and nobody else in the whole world, I don't think choosing paint is my superpower. I'm really good at planning and like making sure form and function and I'm good at that. But choosing paint color, I hate choosing paint color. So anyway, I picked a pink and I was really pushing myself to pick a color that was actually pink and not essence of pink, which is what my go-to would be, essence of pink. Anyway, it got painted and the client called and said, it looks like Barbie pink. You know, that's what it looks like. And I said, well, honey, if that's what it looks like, that's not what we were going for. So don't worry about a thing. I'm going to repaint that for you. Let us get the project finished and see how it, you know, looks at the end. And if it's the wrong pink, it's on me. It's not on you. And she was just so happy about that. She was so happy. I said, you know, it's a bit subjective. That's a creative thing. You know, what color pink? And if it's the wrong pink, don't worry. That's easy to fix. I'll take care of that. I just dread, you know, I'm not good at everything. I'm really not good at lots of things.
Well, we can't be good at everything. Right? That's what I always told my husband that. Like, I can't be perfect at everything, but I'm so good.
Oh, you tell your husband that. No, I tell my husband, no, I am. I'm perfect. Please don't tell him he's hiding in the other room. Please don't tell him we had this conversation. So you think there's value then in having a mission statement and a core value? I would agree with you. It's in my contract. I think there's value in doing that exercise.
Yes. Yeah. And we have a yearly check-in, strategic planning day, where we sit down as a team. We review our mission statement. We review our core values. We review our design process to make sure that it's still relevant and it's working for us. We talk about operational goals for the year. We review our stats on what was our profitability, what was our billable hours. How did those change from one year to the next? So it was a really, you know, it's great. And so everyone understands what the goals are for the year coming up, what we're focused on. Like, obviously, we're focused on billable hours. So, you know, we need to make money and this is a business. And so, again, like Kimberly Seldon says, 80% business, 20% creative. And that is so true.
Yeah.
So, you know, our staff, everyone is focused and we're all moving in the same direction.
I love it. So you actually look at what happened last year and then do you set actual goals for the upcoming year?
Yes.
And are you tracking those goals on a monthly basis?
Not monthly, but I would say we'll probably do a check-in every 6 months.
Okay.
Like half year or maybe quarterly. I keep track of it monthly.
Oh, yes. You do. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, because month over month is kind of an important, like what's going on if it suddenly lags. I'd rather catch it in February so it can be corrected in March rather than wait till June and miss on 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'm tracking it monthly, but as a staff, I don't think we're reviewing it together unless there's an issue that I'm going to bring up in between.
You touched on something in the last interview, and it reminded me of this big category of work-life balance, which is such a, it's just an impossibility. You can't really have a work-life balance. You spend 5 days a week working and only 2 days a week off kind of thing. So where's the balance? It's already gone. And then you add children and life and who knows, yoga. It's like, forget it. It's impossible, right? But how do you put some perspective around your week and take care of yourself so that you're not just, as I was doing when I started, I was living to work rather than working to live. I had it really backwards.
And so we were definitely doing that too, and we were feeling very overwhelmed. And probably 2 years ago at our strategic planning session with our team, we decided that work-life balance needed to be one of our operational goals for the year. And so we said, well, how are we going to make that a reality? What are we going to do? So we looked at our billable hours and where they were and what our percentage of billable hours was that we were working. And it ended up that we were, you know, anywhere from 65 to 80% of our time spent was billable hours. And I said, well, if we can get our time up to 80 and consistently 80, then I think we should reduce our work week. So sure enough, so we reduced our work week. We're now down to a 4.5 day work week. And so my staff can take any half day off a week that they want. So I don't say, oh, it has to be every Friday afternoon. If you need Wednesday afternoon to go play pickleball with your mom, you take it and go have a good time. Or, you know, you've got some grocery shopping or some prep to do for a wedding or like whatever it is that's working, that's happening in your personal life, go take care of it. And you don't need to do that on the weekend. And actually our goal is to get to 4 days a week.
But have the billable hours remain consistent.
That's right. Yeah. Wow. And so we did have to make some changes in order for that to happen. So we quit having as many meetings. So there's more work and less meetings, because meetings are time wasters, generally speaking, unless they're with clients. But, you know, if do you need to have a meeting with that contractor? Do you need to have a meeting with that subtrade? Do you need to have a meeting, a staff meeting? Can we do it? Can we address these things via a quick email or a short phone call instead of a 1 hour meeting plus drive there, drive back? So we kind of looked at it that way. And so my staff are paid for a 5 day work week. They work 4.5 days. And the goal is to get to 4 days. And I think it's going to be great.
I think that's an amazing thing that will benefit you in terms of staff retention as well.
Yeah. And I already, like, we have not seen a decrease in revenue. I've seen an increase.
Right.
So it's ridiculous, actually.
Right.
How happiness and how a focus on work-life balance can make you more productive at work. Like, I kind of didn't believe it, but I thought, well, whatever, let's try it, right? And sure enough, it's life-changing for my staff and for me. And it just, it makes everyone happier to be here and give their 100% when they're here. And when they aren't here, that's great. Go enjoy yourself, you know, and take the time that you need. So it's been wonderful.
That was one of the biggest transitions for me, that idea that you could leave the office at 5 or 5:30, whatever it is, and you're done. There's no looking back, don't answer email, don't look at text, nothing to be done. It'll all be there in the morning when you arrive at work, and you don't have to give it another thought. Where I would spend hours every night just trying to catch up. And of course, never quite catching up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I sometimes still do that. I have to admit, like, I'm kind of a workaholic. One time I went away on holidays. I was going to tell this story in our last meeting, but I'll tell it now. I went on holidays with my family to Orlando, took the kids to Disneyland or Disney World, and ended up with a tick in my eye. And I could not get rid of this tick, and it was driving me insane. So when we got back from holidays, I went to the doctor. The doctor that same day referred me to an ophthalmologist, the ophthalmologist to a neurologist. And I went right all the way to the neurologist in one afternoon. And they thought I had MS or something else. And finally, they just realized it was stress. And it was stress of being on holidays that caused the tick. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be relaxing. But for me, it was the opposite, because I felt like, well, it was all going to be waiting for me when I got back.
Yeah.
And worse, not better, right? Like, anything that sits there that long is yeah. So I just was so stressed out being away. And now I can go away and I can enjoy myself, and my processes and my staff and my systems support the business, and the business runs without me. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, and it's not great, obviously.
For me, no, that would not be great. So often when I hear you talk, I think we have the same story. I remember being at Disneyland with my kids, and I remember specifically my daughter was chatting with one of the characters, Belle, I think a little princess, and yeah. I had to take a work call, and she's wanting me to pay attention to her. Mommy, I'm with Belle. Look at me. And I'm like, what do you mean the Tyler's not there? Tell him to get his ass there. I don't care. Oh, look, you look so pretty. Hi, Belle. Hi. I don't care. Tell him I'm going to kill him. You know, I thought this is not how my daughter wanted to spend her morning at Disneyland with mom, being stressed out on the phone.
Right. I can't tell you how many trips to the zoo, hikes, whatever, it doesn't matter what we're doing, you know, phone call, contractor, you know, tile didn't arrive or whatever it is, right? Like, yeah. And that's not fair. It's not fair to us. Like, we have lives too. We're human beings, and everybody deserves some time off, and it's good for your mental health. And I think there's a huge shift in society right now and realizing that mental health is as important as physical health, and that mental health actually influences your physical health. So the happier you are, the more productive you're going to be, the less work time you're going to miss. And I can see it here in my design studio. I mean, everyone's happy, and we don't have, our staff does not miss work for pretty much anything. Like It's great.
What do you say to that person who says, well, I'm happy at work and I love my work, but I'm not really profitable right now. I'm not really making money. Like, is that reasonable? Yeah, is that a reasonable position to be in if you're running a business?
No, it isn't. Yeah. No, we're not a nonprofit. Like, this is not, in my former job, I was a social worker. That's what I'm actually trained in. I was a social worker, and I ran nonprofit charities in a couple of different ones. So I was the executive director and worked with volunteers and did all the fundraising and managed all the staff and did all of that. Then I had my kids and went, oh, I'm not going back to that. Like, my heart's not in it, whatever. That's nonprofit. That's community good. This is, we're doing community good, but we're going to get paid for it. Yeah. And you have to make money. And if you're not making money and you're not even making enough to sustain a wage for yourself, then you need to go get a real job or put the work in and create your processes to make money. And
And one thing I get a lot, people say, oh, well, it's easy for you. Like, why is it easy for me? How is it easy for what? I'm not sure why you think I'm special or unique.
Some people feel like, well, my life situation is different and I can't possibly do what you're doing because I don't have the money or I don't have the time or, you know, whatever your circumstance is. But I just think that's cop out. I think you need to step in and own your business and run it like a business and be in business. Not be flaky. Like, our whole industry is like anchored in this weird, how many times have you heard someone say something like, oh yeah, she was kind of a flake. Like, she didn't really follow through on anything. And she had these great ideas, but then like, I never heard from her again. Right.
Yeah. Like,
we've all heard that. And I'm not that person, and I'm not going to be the person that doesn't follow through. And you're going to know exactly what you're getting from me up front, and you're going to know when I'm going to do it, how much it's going to cost, and I'm going to make money, and I'm going to tell you how I'm making money. And your whole designer sharing system with all your FF&E is just, it works so beautifully. I talked with a client yesterday. I sent her the quote for all of the, you know, furnishings, et cetera, for her house, and she said to me, oh, like, is there any discount? And I said, well, Kim, actually, like, there is, and this is how it works. And I don't know why you didn't know this already, but we'll go over it again, and this is how it works, and we split our designer discount with you. So all of those prices already include your 25% discount.
Yeah.
So, and she was like super excited about that.
Yeah.
And she got back to me right away and said, oh, this is great. Like, thank you so much. And let's proceed. And so there's, you know, $60,000 worth of furnishings and artwork and area rugs and accessories that are going to be ordered. And she's happier than she could ever be.
Right.
So it's great.
Amazing. Have you transitioned from thinking about salary to thinking about growing independent wealth for yourself? Have you reached that point?
Yes.
You have?
Yay! I have.
Yay! We're celebrating.
Yeah. I actually ended up in a position where I could do like a guaranteed investment certificate. I put it into the bank and I thought, I have, there's been a couple of times in my life where I've really felt like I'm doing it. Like I can't believe I'm doing it, but I am killing it. And this is great. One of them was when I bought my first Mercedes. So like, to me, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
My first car was a 1977 Chevette. So, right?
Come a long way, baby.
Yeah. Like I drove that thing into the ground. You know how.
I love it.
So to get that Mercedes to me meant I was successful.
Yeah.
And I had achieved something. So that was one. And then the next was putting that GIC in the bank and RRSPs and planning for my future. And now I'm starting to think like, okay, so what's my exit strategy and how do I don't know why the light in here seems to be changing.
It's because you're saying such wonderful things. The universe is just shining a light on you. Yeah.
Yeah. So like building wealth is actually a thing you can do when your business is profitable.
Yeah.
And before I started taking your courses, I didn't even know what my profitability should be.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know how to determine what my profit margin was. Like I didn't have any business training. I was a social worker, like literally. So the fact that I was able to, like everything in your books and in your podcasts and your videos are so easy to understand for like non-math people like me.
Like me.
I have no brain with any of that. So, you know, I'm just learning as I go. And everything that happens, my light bulb just comes on and I'm like, oh, this is fun. And now like I'm turning into a total geek when it comes to like analysis and, you know, ooh, what's my profitability? What's my overhead? What are my fixed costs versus my variable costs? And what, you know, all this stuff. And I think it's fun. And maybe it's fun because I'm making money. So then it's fun. Maybe it's not as much fun when you're not. But
money is an excellent lubrication, you know? It just makes everything work better.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, like when you actually look at what your profitability is, what your profit margin is, you can say, okay, well, how can I move that?
Yeah.
Like then that actually, it might even show you, oh, this is a weakness of mine. How can I move that dial?
Yeah.
And become even more profitable.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So and it might be 1%. You might need to change 1% and that can translate into thousands of dollars in your pocket at the end of the year. So analyzing what's going on is critically important, but you got to have those systems in place first. Holly, we love to end every episode with something we call design intervention, which is just a great piece of advice for those listening or watching. Is there something that comes to mind?
Well, yes. For me, the biggest and best piece of design advice I ever got was from you. And you said in the very first session I ever heard you speak at the Toronto Interior Design Show, you said, business of design is 80% business, 20% creative.
Yeah.
That's it. It's so true. And before that, I just thought, well, I mean, it's wonderful, and we're making, you know, beautiful rainbows and marshmallows and everything so fluffy and lovely, and you know, everyone's happy and roses and sunshine and whatever. But really, this is business. This is any business, and the fact that we are primarily women. I think women just haven't been in that role enough, or maybe it's just my generation. I don't know, but I just didn't see myself necessarily as a business owner.
No.
I saw myself as a decorator, as a design consultant, as someone who could really help you with your home and do all those things. But did I think I was actually in business? I thought, no, I'm just a consultant.
Yeah.
I'm helping.
I thought it was 80% creative, and then there was this 20% annoying business part, which I just had to just kind of get through somehow. Like, just, I don't want to do that part. But actually, that's the business part is the money part.
That's the part.
That's all that matters. Yeah.
Yes.
The 20%, you got that. That's the easy part. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. For all of us, that's the easy part.
Yeah, true.
We've already got that.
Yeah.
Good.
Exactly. Holly, so fun to hang out with you. Thank you so, so much. I hope we get to see each other face to face one day again soon.
Yes.
And
me
I'm
too.
Happy that you're going to be growing that wealth, and I'm sure your family will be very happily impacted by that as well. That's great.
Yes, my husband is looking forward to our next trip. It's going to be great.
He's a lucky man. He married well.
That's right. Married me. I always tease him, you married me for all my money. Because at that time, I think I was driving a 1980 Toyota Celica Supra, and it was missing a bumper.
Yeah, cars do tell a little bit of the story, don't they?
Yeah, I know.
They really do.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Amazing. Great to see you, sweetie. Bye for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening and supporting the VOD mission to improve the industry one design business at a time. If you're ready to implement an exact business model for running a streamlined, profitable business, field tested by thousands of design professionals around the world, head to businessofdesign.com and get started today. It's time to dramatically improve your business and transform your life.